there's that moment in poetry where using words, suddenly we have this embrace through paradox of what our life means. And you know, we're searching for it all the time. And the poetry makes you so much more sensitive to it. Sensitive in the way that pianists talk about touch, and they're hitting a lot of keys in a minute. It's a way of being. And if you can bring that to people who have to become deaf, if you can bring that kind of music to people who, I mean, you have to be deaf to go through the subways. You have to be deaf when you're on a boulevard where the trucks are going by, the helicopters and everything is going past, because you're trying to listen through that other noise. You're trying to listen to what your neighbor, what the person you're walking with, your partner is saying. But it's as if as you build calluses. And what poetry does is it demands that you live like, I don't want to say an open wound to the world, but like you live with this high degree of kind of electric sensitivity to the bud of a flower, to the way that a seagull will turn in the middle of the air, or something like that. And at that moment, you know that you're complete with life, rather than, you know, like calloused and armored. Huh? It's a different kind of an existence with poetry, and to be able to bring poetry to people is, you know, like it's the artist's job. My brother's a poet. I was introduced to classical poetry by my sister, who is a classicist. That kind of, you know, when you have classical poetry coming to you, whether it's Sappho or Rumi, whether it's those levels of Shakespeare. My lady teaches at CCNY in Harlem. She teaches Renaissance English theater. And you know, there are those levels of those poets who were able to bring the English language to the highest the capacity of feeling that we know, at least that I know. I've known poets like Bly or Allen Ginsberg, and they demand from you a certain existence. And that's what we should all be trying for, rather than, you know, like getting more and more things, huh? I mean, the person who has the most things wins. But what do you win? You end up having, you know, like, there are people who collect art and put it in warehouses. And I know somebody that used to have Cezannes in a hotel, and they would visit the hotel. They'd visit the hotel, I don't know, maybe 1 week during the year, but the rest of the time those paintings were so precious they were in a safe. Well, nobody sees them inside a safe, and I'm sure that Cezanne did not paint the paintings to be unseen. You know, like it's, those are kind of like the missteps that this society can do. One of the oldest memories of human beings is sculpture. This is the moment that we realize that this animal that we are is trying to put memory into something that will last longer than their lives. We don't find that often in other animals. We have tools and a memory that becomes language. I mean, if we don't have memory in terms of writing, then there is no history, there is no Shakespeare. These are things that are so important. And then, you know, like then when you get to my stage or age, you know, like our minds are so full of different things that you begin to lose memory. And then you can't quite recite everything, you know, like I mean, I can still begin the Shakespeare sonnet that goes, the expense of spirit and a waste of shame is lust in action until action lust is perjured, murderous, savage, full of blame, extreme, rude, cruel, not to trust. Goes on and on. But that, I can do that, but I used to be able to do the Marianne Moore one, and now I just, when I quote just that last part, it's as if as I've lost the memory to the other part, but I can still feel it because she's talking about mortality. And mortality is something that any of us, all of us, know, all of us have as a given, and all of us deal with memory in a funny way with our own mortality, you know, like it's, and she does it, and at the end she's talking about the difference between satisfaction. She says, satisfaction is a lowly thing. How great a thing is joy. I've always liked and tried to do pieces of sculpture that you could walk through and where there was the relationship of the sky to the human being in a way that you felt united to the sky, to the land, to the sculpture. This sense of unity, of participation, is something that I've worked on for, well, at least 30, 40 years. In Storm King, I would really like to see the highway even a little bit better than it's been masked off now. I think that it handles the way that that piece of sculpture is, which is in the old cornfields, it hopefully makes you feel like you are more united, more ecstatic, more joyful with the world, and that there is this very slow motion, but it's a slow motion like you find in clouds, or somebody who lives by sand dunes and sees that the sand dunes themselves move over time. It's a sense of motion that is not, you know, trying to take the corner a little bit faster in a car race. It's a very different in a gentler sense. Maybe it has to do with my becoming older, but it has to do with like the maturing of fruit, the change between the way that a child, when a child looks and has grown up and looks in the mirror and sees themselves, they are not what they were before. And they will become something different, and yet they say that they are the child. I mean, they have the same name, but something has changed, and that is that kind of motion. It has to do with a linkage of time, but outside of time. And so that's the dream that I have to work with. No more difficult than they usually are. It was actually putting it together. I had difficulty with the land. It turns out that I wasn't at a level when I had built it. But when you build these pieces that are 20 meters tall, 30, whatever, you have to realize that the site is the same site as in terms of foundations. To finish it, of course, it became a different kind of a struggle than doing it inside one's studio. I had most of the piece done, and I had lived with it, and it was, I miss it out here. It's strange, I don't miss many sculptures. Because I think that what happens is that once you have done them, they take on their own way in the world. I listen to what they suggest as I begin them, and then if you go with a suggestion, then you're able to sometimes achieve that moment where they seem alive and that they made themselves. It's a hard way to do it. It depends upon, they call it serendipity, they call it all different kinds of names, but it is not all pre-planned. And sometimes they end up being finished and symmetrical, like Mon Père and seems pre-planned. But I did Mon Père when my father died, and I used a kind of a Taoist image of where all of the forces flow through, there's an emptiness. And because there's a poem that Lao Tzu, the great Taoist, did where he says that the utility of a thing is the emptiness, and he talks about the emptiness in a cup being the useful thing, the emptiness in the hub of a wheel being able to carry the axle being the important part. And I wanted to dedicate that piece to my father, and then I ended up with a piece that was symmetrical, which usually I tend to avoid.